Welcome back to the Activation Phase. This is Tim speaking, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, JP. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. All right. So I think we just figured out today is the third to last episode of the Viking Age, and we'll do Anglodanes today. Is that right?
This is 100% correct.
Great. All right, dude. Then also another thing we just discussed before we started recording, we'll skip the the good old fluff part for the Anglodanes because it might not be interesting. Hot take from by JP, by the way. Just hate him, not me. And we'll jump right into the equipment options if you're ready, JP.
Yeah. So actually, the history itself is quite interesting, but we have about 1.5 hours worth of Anglo-Dane historical / fluff content on the YouTube channel from about 5 years ago with 300 views. But personally, I think it's actually a super, super interesting episode. So just search it on the channel. I think it's called like Anglo-Dane Faction Focus. And we go in, one of my reenactor friends goes deep in everything you need to know. So just check that one out. So we're going to keep this episode a little short, and then just guys pump those numbers on the YouTube.
Right.
So now that we're not doing the fluff section, let's do the equipment section, traditionally done by me because you never have.
Tim
your
doesn't
book
have
with
a
you.
Book. That's right.
Literal illiterate. okay. This one is actually pretty simple. So, Warlord has to have a heavy weapon on foot, no choice whatsoever. Your hearth guards can either be without any special equipment or with heavy weapons. Your warriors have absolutely no choice and have no special equipment. And levies, either bows or slings, but it doesn't make a difference for the Anglo-Danes. Nice and simple. And they use the green Germanic dice, Saxon dice. I can't remember what they're called, but you get a lot of mileage out of these dice. So always a good one to pick up.
Yeah, if you're a Goth enjoyer, Saxon enjoyer, what else is there?
The Frank enjoyer.
The Frank enjoyer. Damn, these dice are value.
I think even a Gaul enjoyer, because they the Gauls have very similar. I think they have the horse on the uncommon as well, and they have like the Alexander head on the as the rare. So you've got a helmet, and then they have like two spears instead of the axe. So it's easy, and they're green, so it's easy substitute.
And I think it's. I don't think we're doing a bad thing when I say I think the chivalry factions have a faction or two that use these dice. So. They're definitely value. Buy them now, I guess.
Neither confirm nor deny all right. this statement by Tim. Oops.
All right, the equipment options were pretty easy, man. Like I honestly thought I could do them from top of my head, but I would have thought the warlord can have no equipment as well. But I guess it's you're locked into having a heavy weapon. So easy. JP, do you want to start us off with the battle board then?
Yep. So with the basic abilities, absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. Basic equipment, basic abilities.
Great. All right, then let's get into something that's not quite basic, but very noble instead. And that's the first advanced saga ability. And it's called Noble Lineage, and it can take any die facing. It's an Otis ability that says, turn one of your inactive saga dice to show a face of your choice, or reroll as many of your inactive saga dice as you want. If you use a rare, resolve both effects. So,
What's an inactive saga dice?
Right. An inactive saga die is a die that you rolled, like that is available to be put on an ability, but that has not been put on an ability, and you were allowed to roll already at the beginning of your order's phase. Those are the inactive saga dice.
Right, so you're not actually gaining any dice here. You're just kind of choosing what you want to, what face you want to show.
Yeah. And I think it's quite common, very common actually, to play the Anglo-Danes with 7 dice, or possibly 8, but 7, I guess. And then if you don't roll the rare that you sometimes need to make these, and the Anglo-Danes have lots of spots to put rares on, you can just pay a common to turn another common into a rare. And nothing's stopping you from just using that rare that you get out of that to put it into the activation pool and to just try again with the common you paid to turn it to, like, to switch the face of it. And so this is a once per turn, if you want to use it that way, a once per turn free reroll for 2 of your dice. And rerolling 2 of your dice, I mean, obviously increases the chance of getting a rare without actually losing the with the amount of dice you have. So it's quite the versatile ability. In a pinch, you can always pay die to get a rare. And if you're not in a pinch and you have a rare already and you just want to try again to get one more, it's very easy to use this, to use Noble Lineage to, yeah, switch a die to a rare, roll it again with activation pool, and you'll have the same amount of dice, but possibly more rares.
Yeah. Also, this, like you said, there's a lot of rares and also a double rare.
Yeah.
and abilities where a rare is better. So you'll be using this often, and since it uses all three, or it can take all three of the dice facings, you're it's kind of incentivized to use this often.
I mean, honestly, you should use this every turn. Because even if you have enough rares, you can always try for more. This is capitalism at its core. You should always use this to try to get more.
Right. the next one is pretty sweet. It's called Intimidation. This is either a uncommon or a rare. And this is an order's reaction. So the first unit activated during the next activation phase will suffer a fatigue at the end of its activation. If you used a rare, the first 2 units activated both will suffer a fatigue. So this has been FAQ'd so I just read out the FAQ'd version. I can't remember what it used to be because I stuck the ability over the top of the... So I can't remember what the change was. But this is one of the most annoying abilities on this board when you're playing Anglo-Danes. Just be aware. Actually, I'm just going to help people who are playing against Anglo-Danes. This is the reason why you have like a small unit of 4 warriors in the back in maneuver.
Ground. Yeah,
like open ground, and just maneuver them, soak up that intimidation, and just make them waste their dice and generate a dice yourself. So pro tip. But yeah, the rare on this is so incredibly annoying. It just shuts down the entire kind of game plan of your opponent, unless they have a really easy way of getting rid of fatigue in like either with order's reaction or some kind of not activation, but like just, for example, remove 2 fatigues from your warband during the activation phase. But there's not a lot of those abilities around. So this is kind of the first of many abilities from this board where you just kind of slowly grind down the opponent with lots of fatigue.
Yeah, just before the FAQ, it said before the at the beginning of the activation. So people just rested to get the intimidation out, because if you have no fatigue and you rest, then you will get the fatigue before you activate to rest, and then the rest just removes the fatigue again. And so they change it around to be at the end of the activation now. And so, yeah, very annoying.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah, playing around intimidation with the trick you just said, I think it's always, if an ability is that good that you can mess with like how your opponent sets up their army, I think that's always a sign of oof. That's a pretty good one. Just like for the Romans for Age of Invasions, the one where you can put like markers on units, and then every time they shoot or fight, they get a fatigue that usually incentivizes people to put down more small units, because then if you have big units, that will always be torn up by the Romans, and so this is just the same and very annoying. All right, next up is Shield Wall. It's a melee or shooting reaction that takes two commons. Increase your unit's armor by one. This is, I think, to paying two commons to increase your armor by one is, in my opinion, usually only worth it for Hearthguard. Like, high armor targets get even harder to hit when you have, or your Warlord possibly, when you have, like, the higher your armor, the better increasing it by one is. So, yeah, this one's very expensive, and I think there's usually with the Anglodanes, there's lots of scenarios where you'd rather have the two commons on the comet bonus or other abilities on here, because I think some of the time two defense dice have a better effect than increasing armor by one, and they are more versatile. So not a big fan of this, but that's also coming from me, an aggressive saga player. And so, yeah, what do you think about this one, JP?
I think the commons make it like two dice, also two commons, especially if you like to play some extra warriors as well, make it a little bit difficult to play consistently. Yeah. But I think if you're later on, we'll talk about the kind of how to take the warband and some different ways of building it. If you're taking like the Hearthguard Death Star, then yes, then this would completely wreck face and make sure that your heavy weapon armed guys survive a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one is Unforgiving. This is a melee ability and again uses a uncommon and a rare. So the enemy unit suffers a fatigue. You can no longer use enemy fatigue during this melee. So this is a nice little ability to just dump even more fatigue on a unit. So we've already had Intimidation. Now we have Unforgiving as well. The downside is, yes, you can't use the fatigue in the melee. But depending on when you play this, you can already mess around with their fatigue to either increase your armor or decrease theirs, and then just kind of make sure that they end their combat with at least two fatigues. So this is pretty, this is more of a setting up the unit for like a follow-up punch with, for example, a Danax armed Hearthguard unit, something like that. And it's also amazing against, for example, like Warlords or something like that, if you just
want to
get even more fatigue on them. And it also means that someone, for example, if you're getting charged by a Warlord who wants to wipe out like four or three warriors or something like that, there's no way you're going to kill the guy, but he can end up with two fatigue just by, so the trade-off isn't quite that interesting for him anymore.
I mean, having the possibility of having small units that are basically depleted, putting on two fatigues by just tagging an enemy unit once, that is very annoying. And if they already have fatigue, that's usually good enough. Then of course they're exhausted and whatever. I mean, you have your Hearthguard with high armor already, you have your Wallet with high armor, so I think there's lots of good trades waiting to happen once, especially with an army that has so high, has like armor this high, where you can never be hit yourself, and that's always annoying and obviously frustrating for the enemy, but super effective. So anything that you can exhaust with this and just kind of offer up one or two of your figures because the unit's depleted anyway, or anything with resilience, hates this ability.
Also I think the goal of this, of the Anglo-Danes basically, is to make sure that either you become completely immune to the attacks by having someone exhausted and then bumping up your armor to six, or being able to decrease their armor and just getting auto hits with the heavy weapons. So it's kind of like those two. Those are the holy grails of the Anglo-Danes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the next ability perfectly plays into that. It's called Crush the Weak. It's a melee ability that takes one single common. If the enemy unit has an armor of 3 or less, gain 4 attack dice or 4 defense dice. And this, with exactly the scenario you just talked about, where you can pull down the enemy armor, where you can auto-hit with your heavy weapons or hit on twos or whatever, if you combine this with Crush the Weak to just get those extra attack dice, because they will hurt a ton when they just go through immediately, like no roll needed or just on twos. And so this one's very good. And then, of course, if you have those pesky little annoying levies charge into your Hearthguard or whatever, or just warriors with javelins, I mean, yeah, they will be annoying. Gaining defense dice, always great.
Right. It's pretty strong so far, I would say. So yeah. The next one is the, I don't know, I would say this is the signature one from the board.
No, I think intimidation is the signature one, but exhaustion is like the big daddy that you can barely afford.
Yeah, but you kind of splurge yeah. on the double yeah. rare. So yes, this is exhaustion. This is Order's ability, and like I said, it takes 2 rares, which is a little bit easier to get due to noble lineage, but still costly. So choose 3 units. Each one suffers a fatigue. So this is done in the Order's phase. So it means you can line up kind of the opponent. You know what you're going to do. You set up your board, and then you basically want to attack 3 different units or annoy 3 different units, and this is perfect for that. So nice setting up the battlefield to take advantage of it. Very, very costly, but incredibly annoying, especially late in the game if you do roll those two rares and your opponent is already struggling with dice. Also, I just realized a lot of the scenarios and everything else require a unit to not be exhausted to capture a point or something like that. So potentially incredibly annoying.
Yeah. I mean, it's just with the Anglo-Danes, I think the whole exhaustion game is very annoying into armies that aren't prepared to handle it. Just before I go into the next ability, I think just to give kind of a, like, just a feel for this, because all these exhaustion things are so, this fatigue things are so good into armies, and there are a bunch of those armies that have no way with dealing with fatigue other than the resting. And those armies will just be overwhelmed by intimidation, exhaustion, unforgiving, these abilities that put on extra fatigue because they will never get rid of it. And then there's other armies that have easy ways to get rid of the fatigue, where this is the biggest waste of your time and saga dice. And so I think knowing who you play into and deciding whether exhaustion, intimidation, unforgiving are worth it is a big part of learning how to play the Anglo-Danes effectively. Right.
Yeah, it's definitely it can be a little bit of a trap to try to play this every single time. Absolutely. Because sometimes it's just not effective. So yes, it's not the goal to play exhaustion as much as possible. Often intimidation will be much more dice efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's like very good places to put rares here, and we went through intimidation already, of course, and noble lineage is an okay place for a rare as well. So that'll be one more ability that takes a rare. So yeah, okay. Let's get into the next 2 die ability, which takes a common and an uncommon, and it's called Like Rocks. Melee or shooting reaction. You may reroll any defense dice you wish. So if you feel like you saved too many, just reroll them. But if you feel like you saved not enough, just reroll them. And so with Crush the Weak, for example, which gives your defense dice or just a good old combat bonus, when you already have additional dice and you get to reroll, that's insane. Let me tell you that as a Skraeling player who really, really enjoys his totems. that lets you reroll the Electrode Image, lets you reroll the defense dice. That's insane. So, two die ability, of course, bit expensive, common and uncommon, bit expensive. But I think, especially if there, if you know there's going to be one, your opponent has a Death Star, and there will be a 25 attack die ability coming, fight melee coming up, then having this ready will be a lifesaver. How often do you see this play, JP?
I don't remember, actually. I haven't played Anglo Danes for, I think, 12 months now. So,
okay.
I think the last time was the Essen tournament in January 2023. So,
okay.
And then I have actually a very, very bad memory of the next ability.
Cool.
But yeah. So the next ability is Shock. This is using an uncommon. This is an activation. So activate a unit to charge. The charge unit cannot close ranks. So first of all, kind of a good combo in terms of being able to also activate a unit of warriors to charge using an uncommon.
Yes.
And not being able to close ranks, obviously, it's not going to be very useful for cavalry or javelins or other stuff, but sometimes you just want to make sure that a unit dies. and being one thing that you can't change, really, you can change a lot, the armor with all the fatigue that you put down, but you can't change what they save on. So it's annoying that you're doing all these attacks and then they still save on fours. So here you can make sure that they save on fives. In addition to it, with all the fatigues that you've put on with the previous abilities, you can normally bump up your armor significantly. So them not losing half their attack dice is less of a big deal. So you can mitigate a number of factors there, and then just make sure that they die this way. So overall, I think this one's a pretty good value. Not every single time. Sometimes it's okay if they close ranks, but or if you're charging things that can't close ranks, it's less useful, but still pretty good ability.
I think it honestly speaks volumes that it takes an uncommon, and it's such a versatile ability because you just put it on here and your opponent will always be guessing what this is for. Because, of course, having a die on your Hearthguard activation always projects, okay, they are still doing something with their Warlord or Hearthguard. And having something on your Warriors does the same. But this just says something will come charging, but I can't tell where. And that's very powerful in of itself. And then the only problem I see is that it's an uncommon, and I feel like the next ability is also takes an uncommon and it's great, and Unforgiving also takes an uncommon and it's great, and Intimidation, the one where the next activation will make the unit suffer a fatigue, is also really good. So the slot for the uncommon is quite kind of really busy here, and so I obviously think levies are quite hard to field with the Anglo Danes, but that's not what they're made for anyway. So I guess, yeah, next up is Determination. It's a melee ability that takes it an uncommon, as I just spoiled before. Gain three dice, attack, defense, or a mix of the two. Gain an extra die of your choice for each fatigue on the enemy unit. And so, I mean, it's great that this furthers the game plan. This supports the game plan of you want the enemy unit to have fatigue, and then you get rewarded for it, because potentially gaining six dice for an uncommon is great value. That's Hun level of value, and we know how well the Huns do. So I think, yeah, it's a pretty good ability.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, you can play this first and then use their fatigue later. Anyway, to kind of reinforce what you what you want to achieve. So that way you can be both offensive and very defensive at the same time.
Yeah. So
always a really, really nice combination.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've reached the end of the board with the big, I guess, another rare ability. The aptly named Lord of War. This is an activation. You need a rare for this. So remove all fatigues from your Warlord. His armor is 6 until the start of your next turn. You may not activate your Warlord again this turn. So I think straight up, There's a few misconceptions about this ability. So yes, your armor is 6. However, so since you have to take a great weapon and the great weapon has a -1 modifier to your armor, that means that unfortunately you don't get to save on 6s, but you do get to save on 5s instead of the 4s you normally do. Removing fatigue from your warlord is already pretty sweet and really incentivizes you to have a very kind of middle of the combat type warlord, since you can soak up a lot of damage that would otherwise be killing your Hearthguard, for example, and then completely wipe it off the board and be completely fresh in your activation phase. At the end of your activation phase.
Yeah.
That basically means you can charge in, murder a bunch of things in your turn, do this at the end of your turn, and if he has like 2 or 3 fatigues, he's completely fresh and ready to go. And he's not quite as exposed as what you would expect him to be in your opponent's turn.
And I think the longer the game goes on, the more effective this becomes, right? Because then you can keep on fighting small units that are left without really risking your wallet. And he usually end up with 2 or 3 fatigues. And you can just use this ability and he will be fresh. And at the end of the game, in like turn 4, 5, 6, it's always a struggle to get enough firepower, enough threat into a warlord without losing a lot yourself. So I think this is a late game ability that usually can really just outgrind your opponent, because they will always lose 2, 3, 4, 5 warriors when fighting a warlord, but you will always just get fatigues and you can take him off.
Yeah, and kind of over the course of a game, it means that you've soaked up something like 9 or 12 attacks that would otherwise have killed some warriors or Hearthguard. So
yeah.
It's just such a lifesaver, because always when you charge in the small units that you're mopping up and just want to reduce their number of dice and stuff like that, there's always a risk of losing 1 or 2 Hearthguard. Like, you always know if you're charging Hearthguard into Levy that the trade-off is going to be bad. And this kind of takes that away. So it's a really good utility one. And also the rare is not that difficult to get via Noble Lineage to begin with. So if you need it, you can always put it on there. And yeah. I suppose, ironically, this is also the only way that Anglo-Danes actually have to manage their own fatigue. So they're very good at giving fatigue, but they're not actually that good at getting fatigue, except for the Warlord.
True. Yeah. So yeah, this is not like this isn't like the Morse where you always fatigue yourself, but of course you'll end up with fatigue if you fight a lot, which these guys want to do. So having a singular way to kind of deal with that for your warlord is good.
So, I don't know about you, but I got a little bit more excited.
Me too, actually, yeah.
About the Anglo-Danes after talking about this. I played them all through version 1. And then I kind of got, I had a little bit enough. And then I put them away and sold them. But now I'm not bad, not bad.
So, how JP, how do you build them?
How do I build them? I don't actually think I've played as Anglo-Danes during V2. I've played against them a number of times because they are quite popular. Also, they are pretty cool with the heavy weapons, and it's kind of one of those factions that people step into. Like Vikings and Anglo-Danes seem to be kind of like the two starter ones to go to, maybe Normans as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of the Bayeux tapestry with Harold Godwinson getting shot in the eye and the Huskarls and stuff like that. It's pretty iconic. And there's also a whole bunch of hits, or either Victrix or otherwise, or metal, which look pretty damn sweet, which you can pick up quite easily. So the way I've actually built the current warband is just using a single Victrix bag of just Anglo-Danes, surprisingly.
What?
I know. And based on that, I think I went for, but it was more driven by just what's in the kit itself. I think I went with 3 points of warriors and then 3 points of Hearthguard in two blocks of six, basically. And one of them has a banner. There's no reason you can't throw in like one unit of levies just to kind of shoot cavalry type armies. There's not a lot to support levy on this board whatsoever, but shooting is never bad, especially if you're facing like Welsh or something annoying like that, or Normans, right, or something like that, where you just need to be able to control a little bit the board, put them in some put them in a forest and just kind of make sure that they don't that you control the movement of kind of high mobility armies a little bit, since there aren't actually any multiple activations or any kind of buffs on movement. I mean, yeah. Shock is kind of like, yeah, it's efficient, but it's not like you're activating multiple units. So that's really one of the downsides. You need to be able to control the board and catch people who are quicker than you. I mean, the fatigue helps with that somewhat, but not always. In terms of maybe like a more optimal one, I think I would go maybe 1.5 or 2 points of Hearthguard. I think Hearthguard with either heavy weapons or just swords and shields, both totally legitimate depending on the faction that you're facing. And then I would just go with basically the rest warriors. Can't go wrong with warriors.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right on the nose with that. If your opponent has access to javelins, don't touch the heavy weapon Hearthguard. And if they don't, I think the heavy weapon Hearthguard are a great option. But of course, they're a lot more aggressive and you have to do a lot more to keep them safe, because that one armor difference just makes a ton of difference. Like I said before, I mean, increasing your, like the heavy weapon guys with armor 4, increasing it to 5 takes away a third of the attacks you will get. And increasing your armor from 5 to 6 instead increases away the like half of the hits you get. So that is a big difference in of itself. And so it is something that you have to be conscious about and make sure that that's a playstyle you can commit to. Because I think, yeah, the heavy weapons are much harder to play. You might disagree, JP, but for me personally, I think the heavy weapons are harder to play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there you always have to think about them surviving. But on the other hand, they are pretty scary. Like you, like six Hearthguards charging into a like warriors or anything else. Especially here, you can buff up their armor significantly. You can do a lot of damage and actually survive a lot. So I think this is probably one of the more viable factions of playing heavy weapon Hearthguards.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Also, they look cool. So there's
that. Right.
How would you play Anglo-Danes?
I would never touch Levy, I think, for the reasons stated. Because I think the uncommon is just too sought after with the board. And so, yeah, the Anglo-Danes, not going with the Death Star route of having like a 8-man Hearthguard unit, I think they're very good. Just 3 points of warriors, 3 points of Hearthguard, 6-6, and then something like 8-8-8 or 6-6-12 maybe. You end up with 6 dice, so possibly do split one unit of your 8 warriors into 2 fours, just because I think when you have the dice, your other units just stay alive so much longer because the enemy units will have fatigue and you will have your armor up and you will have defense dice and everything. So me being a more straightforward and aggressive player that is probably too stupid to play the Anglo-Danes, I think, yeah, 6 and 6 Hearthguard and then 8 and 8 warriors and 4 warriors, I think that should work fine.
Yeah. I also think if you go the 2 points of Hearthguard route and one unit, you probably want a banner on them just to keep them going. Because you can't really do any, yeah, your own fatigue is difficult to get rid of.
And yeah, yeah.
I think combining that with the Lord of War as well, your warlord wants to be getting into combats, maybe not straight away, but definitely like the second half of the game. And then you don't want it to be kind of babysitting levies and using Weobay to shoot them or anything like that. So he needs to be upfront to make to kind of get his money's worth.
And that's also a very, very, very good point. It's so good to have your warlord up there in front when the Hearthguard are actually not equipped with heavy weapons, because the Hearthguard are supposed to soak up, and every it's just going to be such a problem, because your opponent either attacks into your Hearthguard, which can close ranks, and they will close ranks without equipment, because of course you don't want them to die away when they are protecting warlord. And they can take some things out, but not a lot. Or they go into your warlord, which is softer usually, since he doesn't since he has the heavy weapon.
Yeah, he has to take the heavy weapon.
But that's not great either, right? So I think the Hearthguard with no equipment options keep your warlord even safer than the ones with heavy weapons.
Yeah, and also with Lord of War, your warlord will also be kind of the same armor as your Hearthguard without heavy weapons.
As you said before, not closing ranks obviously like a huge deal, and so yeah, heavy weapons I think are good, but to kind of enable your Lord of War playstyle with your warlord, kind of one unit that should not have heavy weapons for the Hearthguard. That's my opinion, yeah.
Right, cool. So I guess very few equipment options, but lots of different options in terms of playstyle. And it's actually good to see the Hearthguards being viable and being put on the board. So happy to see that. Right, should we talk about how you build... What models, everything else? I think the hands down at the moment, Victrix, Anglo-Dane, I can't remember what they're called, just Anglo-Danes. We did a review of them a while ago. No, they've got two kits. So one's the Huskarls one, and that's purely just guys, just Hearthguard, the armored guys. And then there's a second kit, which has a mix of...
Yeah, it's just called Late Saxons, the other kit, right? That's Anglo-Danes. Yeah.
All right, so get that one because you have more than enough Hearthguard in there, and you're going to struggle to get enough warriors out of them. I think you can build easily some like 4 points of warriors, and then you can easily get 4 points of Hearthguard, probably more, and then I think you can just about build 3 points of warriors with that. With that particular kit, but then you can use, for example, the Dark Ages archers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because their bodies are interchangeable, and you can just put some slap some spears on them, and you're good to go.
And also the Anglo-Saxon kit has the monk in the command sprue, which is, I mean, the priest is a viable option for the Anglo-Danes as a mercenary, and so because of course handling fatigue and shit. So it's a pretty good kit to get for your for the Anglo-Danes. And yeah, then please JP, do us the honors. What other kit that could be used for the Dark Age is viable for these guys?
Yeah, I think the good old Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors. Legitimate.
Thank you.
You're gonna need to. They have a kind of 4 point starter for Anglo-Danes in plastic, but from what I understand, you need to kind of mess around and build your own heavy weapon kind of conversion from them. So that's a little bit disappointing. I know now I think the Irish kit has some double-handed axes in it, but then you need to start mixing and matching and everything else. So it's not as easy as the Victrix kit, unfortunately. But there's nothing wrong with them, and I think there as well, given the detail, it's probably one of the... if you decide to go that route, you can really quickly get a warband on the table. And there I would basically just buy one box of Dark Age Warriors and one box of the 4-point Anglo-Saxon starter kit from Gripping Beast, and then you're good to go.
The thing is,
pretty much have so many Dark Age Warriors you can do, like Saxons, Franks, Anglo-Saxons probably. So it's like a good starting point for basically everything in either Age of Vikings or Age of Invasions.
Yeah, and then I think Wargames Atlantic doesn't really have anything to offer for these kits, but of course I've seen people use some of the Irish models because they're a great mix between the insane detail of Victrix and the insane non-detail of Gripping Beast. But yeah,
I think there you're better off going with the Goth. Goth box, and then avoiding the helmets, and then just making warriors with just like the bare heads.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have to source some kind of guys with some chainmail and from somewhere else. So probably like the Roman kit, it might look a little bit weird. And then you're going to have to find some people with a double-handed, like heavy weapons.
I guess it's pretty easy. If you have the time, go with Victrix. And if you don't have the time, go with the Gripping Beast things. Like the time to paint, I mean.
Yeah, do that. But
cool.
Personally, my preference here would go towards Victrix instead of the Dark Age Warriors, which is surprising.
Just looks so good. Yeah.
They look really good. And if you do decide to do the Victrix, just spray them for brown by Army Painter. And then you're already 65% of the way there.
Great. All right. All right. So give us a, JP, give us a rating out of five heavy weapons, maybe, or just out of five Danes. What would you give them?
I would give them a 3.5 handlebar mustaches out of
five handlebar mustaches. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a very fair rating. I will join you on those 3.5 because, I think there is ways to play around them, and I think they can kind of be a noob crushing factions of sorts, because if you play them right, you will never lose a model. But if you throw enough single small attacks or shots at them and do the trick with the maneuvering unit and all those things, I think they kind of struggle to get the value out of all of their abilities. And so, these kind of feel like a noob crusher to me sometimes.
Yeah, I think a lot of new players start playing them, and they're actually not that simple to play and play well, because you need to understand fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to kind of plan ahead and understand, like, okay, if my Warlord does this turn, I'm going to probably survive, and then I can use Lord of War to basically reset the Warlord, all this kind of stuff. It actually requires a pretty good understanding of Saga and kind of the probabilities to play really well.
Yeah.
I do not find playing Anglo-Danes easy or a walkover at all. They're always tough because even if the person isn't being offensive with them, they can basically just hunker down and decide not to die. And then it becomes pretty
their
tough
abilities
to get
are just,
anything.
Are just them. Good. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I also think that in version 2, they've become much more offensively focused. So they're not just the turtle in a turtle up in a corner faction they used to be. So I think that the playstyle itself is very, very interesting. So I'm actually somewhat tempted to... Give them another go for this version 2.
All right, I think that those are the perfect ending words. Do you have anything else to add, JP, or do you think we're done?
I think we're almost done. Maybe two small announcements. In terms of what's coming up, the coming year. Risks not aging particularly well, but we have the Benelux Grand Melee coming up 2024, 26th of May. This time round, so this is going to be the third Benelux Grand Melee, we are playing Age of Hannibal only. And we are playing it in Aarschot in Belgium. So it's about an hour away from Antwerp, hour and a half away from Brussels. relatively easy to get to from like Germany and stuff like that. So yes, signups are open for on T3. We have 32 places, and I think we're up to about 24, 25 entries so far. So that's in end of May. Also have a Age of Vikings tournament 20th of April in Amersfoort. And here we're just kind of going to try a few different new things, nothing too serious. We're going to use the Saga, or sorry, the Studio Tomahawk recently released tournament pack to see how that plays with their scenarios. And we're also allowing Skraelings, old friend, new enemies, and also the Polish PS Dynasty. So hopefully we see a lot of different warbands hitting the tables. And then finally, also in September in Amersfoort, we'll be doing Grand Chevauchée. So hopefully the Age of Chivalry will be out by then.
Please, 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 yeah.
And then going in completely blind, seeing what's kind of getting people hyped up and painting. I think it's safe to say there will be English and French involved. So hit that Perry's website and paint
do
up
it
some
now.
Men at arms and some dudes. So see you there.
Yeah. Right. I guess that's it with your with the announcement, right?
Yeah, that's me done with tournaments for this year. So
right,
I've done my bit.
I'm also trying to do my bit, and I'm fighting for a
For the people, and I think there are a few that have visited Osnabrück for a tournament before. We no longer have that great, great, sweet place we had before. Kind of moved out of there, even though it was incredible. But we have a new home for our club now, and that one's a bit more difficult to organize tournaments with, which is unfortunate for us tournament organizers, but it's easier for the players. For like the club, the usual club members. So I am fighting to organize a tournament in, I kind of wanted to do early April, late March, to not clash with JP's tournament plans too much, but I might move it back a bit into July. We'll see. So, but there'll be an announcement early enough so that people can try to attend. And it of course will be the third Osna Teutoburger, the third Schlacht am Teutoburger Wald, the fight of the Teutoburg Forest. And we'll see what age and everything, but I'm trying. We'll see what 2024 brings.
Yeah, the trick is to announce your tournaments like before everyone else, and then just let other people stress about avoiding your tournaments.
Yeah, fuck you.
That's why I put out the announcement like sometime in the beginning of December or something. I was like, well, that way I've tried organizing around other people's tournaments and pain in the ass. And now I was like, well, now it's other people's problem.
It is. Yeah.
I've got mine sorted. So I'm glad that's that strategy has worked out for me this year.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much for listening. You will notice that we're smashing the targets and meeting all the release dates, right, Tim?
Right. That will age terribly if I don't make it by Friday. So I will work hard on this release, like you did on the last one.
I'm glad. All right. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening, and catch you soon.
Thanks for the pressure. Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye.